In today's interview, we are welcoming Dr. Jonathan Floyd from the University of Bristol. He is an excellent researcher and lecturer with emphasis on public political philosophy. In this interview, he will explain his field of research to us and then answer some questions about his thoughts on compromise. My first question would be, what is public political philosophy and why is it important?
So, political philosophy, if we drop the public for a minute, is about how we should live, how we should organize our collective existence, what politics should be like. Not what it is like, but what it should be like. And as soon as we start arguing about that, we very quickly start working with principles, general rules about what sort of freedom we should have, what kind of democracy we need, what would be a legitimate state, what would be a just taxation system, principles of justice, legitimacy, democracy, and so on. So political philosophers argue about these principles. They argue about these ideas that can be used as rules to shape our collective life together. When we do that in private, in seminar rooms and articles and books and so on, we're doing ordinary professional political philosophy. But when we do it in public, and when we do it in ways the public can understand, accessible ways, intelligible ways, maybe slightly simpler ways, ways that they can access, ways that are interesting for them, then we're doing public political philosophy. So political philosophy, the way I define it is public political philosophy is political philosophy in and for the public. It's in public where they can see it, where they can understand it, and it's for the public, talking about things that are interesting to them, talking about political issues that matter to their lives.
What can philosophers do in order to be good public political philosophers?
That is a good question, and I'm still working it out. And I'm very open to see how others do it, to get inspiration from them, because there are people who I think are very good public political philosophers, people like Anora O'Neill in the United Kingdom. She is a famous Kantian philosopher. She's also a member of the House of Lords. She has experience of legislative reform. She does a lot of work as a public intellectual. She gave the BBC Reith Lectures once upon a time on trust, talking very clearly, but also in a sophisticated way and also in an interesting way about the concept of trust, about mistrust, about distrust. So there's lots of good work out there. And I think to get good at that, you have to look at what other people do, first of all, and then you have to practice. And I suppose for me, and maybe for others, the first place you practice is teaching, right? Because when you teach students, and students come into your classroom or your seminar room or your lecture theatre, particularly in the first year, they maybe have never heard of philosophy or political philosophy. They're not used to thinking with principles. They're not used to thinking about these concepts and these ideas and so on. So you take them from the ground up. You use examples. You use illustrations. You use what philosophers sometimes call thought experiments. We say, imagine you're on a runaway train and you had a choice between hitting four people or one person. Would you pull a lever so that you hit the one person and not the four? So we ask them quite simple questions, but in order to get them to think about the principles. So we do that in teaching. And if we can get good at that at teaching, that helps us be good at that in public.
Do you think that your approach on public political philosophy may also be important for other scholars from other disciplines?
I think so. So I think part of the challenge of being a public political philosopher is in general the challenge of being a public intellectual. So that means finding that balance between making things more accessible, but not overly simplifying, or as we say in English, dumbing down. It also means trying to sometimes deal, particularly in politics, sometimes deal with controversial issues, but without causing excessive controversies. So you could be a public intellectual talking about medical ethics or about the rules during a COVID pandemic or about whether we test, you know, things on animals or about all sorts of issues, right? War and peace and where we spend our money. And that's difficult to do in public. That's difficult to do without upsetting people so much that they don't listen. It's difficult to do without maybe having your colleagues wonder what on earth you're doing out of the seminar room, out of the lecture theatre. So you have to find this balance between too simple or too complicated, too controversial, where you get just people angry and they're not even listening, but also you don't want to take out the genuine controversy or the genuine conflicts or the genuine trade-offs in ideas. So you keep having to find this balance and you keep having to kind of find this judgment, right, to get that right. And that takes practice. And again, it takes looking at people who we think do it well, right? Politicians need to find that balance when they talk to the public. Journalists need to find that balance. We need to find that balance when we teach, you know? finding it just right so that we're opening people's minds rather than switching them off.
Compromise may not have the best of reputations. Sometimes it's seen as a burden, as an unsatisfactory solution, or even a failure of original plans. From the perspective of political philosophy, what do you think could put compromise in a better light?
I find it very interesting, and I also find it very sad that compromise is sometimes a dirty word, right? Because it seems to me what we're generally living with is the opposite, which is horrible, which is polarization, right? Where people see each other as two tribes, and each tribe sees the other tribe as evil or wrong or bizarre, and then we don't talk to one another. Now, I think the business of public political philosophy is conversation, not conversion, conversation, helping people to understand the other point of view, helping people to understand the principles on each side and therefore why each side is attracted to the policies or the people or the parties they are, even if you think those policies or people or parties are wrong, at least understand why there's something there that could be attractive to a reasonable person. So compromise isn't a luxury good, it's a necessity, right? And of course there can be better or worse compromises, there can be compromises based on ignorance or oppression. But again, public political philosophy pushes back against that. It tries to clarify, it tries to encourage dialogue, conversation, for people to see the principles at stake in their commitments and for them to see new principles they hadn't thought of. Public political philosophy is not everything. It can't solve everything. It's just a small way of helping. But the way it helps is to try and help people find a little bit of distance from the person they're talking about or the policy they're talking about. So I've talked about it in the last few weeks in France, where they've had a lot of protests, in Israel, where they've had a lot of protests. I'm now in Germany, in Münster, and we've just seen there is a protest outside on the lake. And people at protest, they're very committed, they're very passionate, they're often very angry. And what you want is for people to, you know, to think about and to talk about those issues that make them angry, but sometimes find that little distance. So rather than talking about the individual, we talk about ideas like sovereignty, territory, justice, legitimacy, equality, freedom, rather than the precise tax policy or the exact war or the particular institutional reform, right? Just to get that little bit of distance. So we're still talking about the thing we care about. We're still talking about the thing we need to compromise over, but we get a little bit of distance to see the principles at stake.
In our research association, we talk a lot about the cultures of compromise. Do you think that a compromise is different in different contexts and cultures? And may such differences have something to do with the respectively prevailing tradition of political thought?
Yeah, I think the term culture is helpful here. I mean, I think of cultures of things that are done repetitively or habitually. So you have coffee culture, if people keep going and have coffee in coffee shops and they talk about their coffee and they enjoy their coffee, right? You have a culture of compromise if people are used to looking for compromise, finding compromise. You have a philosophical culture if people understand what philosophy is and they do philosophy and they access philosophy and they talk about philosophy. I always like this line that the British politician, who's quite a divisive or polarizing figure nonetheless, Margaret Thatcher, but she had this line that she got from her father. And we're not quite sure where her father got it from. It may have been advertising. But the line is something like this. It's, watch your thoughts for they become words. Watch your words for they become deeds. Watch your deeds for they become habits. Watch your habits because for they become your character. And watch your character because it becomes destiny, right? The point is, if you keep doing something, you become that thing. So the way public political philosophy can help with compromise is if it helps people to find compromise, if it keeps encouraging compromise, if people keep compromising, then you have a culture of compromise. You have a culture of compromise when people are used to, are habitually compromising with one another. And that's not a bad thing. That's not a dirty thing. We are pulled in different directions. We misunderstand one another. There are lots of good things in the world and we can't have them all, right? So you have a culture of compromise when people are used to, are habitually, you know, they become compromisers. Your culture becomes a culture of compromise. And this is what you want in general. You want people to be used to being kind to one another. So public political philosophy is part of what we do to try and get that habitual, repetitive, normalizing culture.
If you want to find out more about public political philosophy and the work of Dr. Jonathan Floyd, you can find a lot of his publications on the website of the University of Bristol. Also, make sure to check out our website for more interviews in the near future.